Sai Ram, and welcome to all our listeners to today's afternoon satsang. This Thursday afternoon, we have got a very special topic, and it's a topic that is close to our hearts, and it is a secret that, it's not actually a secret in that sense, it is something that Swami has given us, following which, at a practical level, we can ensure that we are leading our lives in accordance to Swami's principles and teachings. Most importantly, we can be assured that if we lead our lives in that manner, Swami will be pleased and Swami is happy. So, it's a very lovely theme. It's a very popular theme as well. I'm sure that when we introduce the theme, you will all be able to resonate with it. But the thing is, I don't think Prem or me will be introducing the theme today, because we were lucky enough to extract a sweet little discourse clip in which Swami himself is in a way introducing the theme for today's satsang. So offering our humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami, both Prem and myself, we offer our Sai Rams to you, and we welcome Swami through this discourse clip where he introduces today's topic for us.
నేను చెప్తుంటాను చాలా మంది పిల్లలకు వాచ్ అంటే స్పెల్లింగ్ WATCH.
భగవాన్ ఆఫెన్ టెల్స్ అవర్ స్టూడెంట్స్ ది స్పెల్లింగ్ ఆఫ్ వాచ్ WATCH.
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 మొట్టమొదటి పిల్లలకు బోధించాలి. వాట్ ఈస్ దిస్? దిస్ ఇస్ వాచ్.
వాట్ ఈస్ దిస్? యు సే ఇట్ ఈస్ వాచ్.
ఫస్ట్ వర్డ్, ఫస్ట్ పదము W.
ది ఫస్ట్ లెటర్ ఇస్ W.
వాచ్ యువర్ వర్డ్.
Watch your word.
నేను పవిత్రమైన వర్డ్ ప్రవేశిస్తున్నానా లేక దుర్మార్గమైనటువంటి పదములను ప్రవేశిస్తున్నానా అని వాచ్ చేయాలి.
హీ షుడ్ వాచ్ హిస్ వర్డ్స్ వెదర్ హిస్ వర్డ్స్ ఆర్ హార్ష్ ఆర్ సాఫ్ట్ ఆర్
స్వీట్. రెండవది
ఏ ఇస్ ద సెకండ్ లెటర్.
ఏమిటిది యాక్షన్? వాచ్ యువర్ యాక్షన్.
వాట్ ఈస్ ఇట్? వాచ్ యువర్ యాక్షన్.
మూడవ వర్డ్ టీ.
థర్డ్ వన్ ఇస్
వాచ్ యువర్ థాట్.
వాచ్ యువర్ థాట్.
సి
C is the next letter.
C anega, watch your character.
Watch your character.
H.
H.
Watch your heart.
Watch your heart.
This is the real watch.
This is the real watch.
Watch anega, rest watch ni chustuntaru. Adi kaadu watch.
Watch does not mean merely wrist watch.
Wrist watch chedipothuntadi.
Wrist watch gets spoiled.
Kaani ee okka word anetri watch ee naatiki chedadu.
But this watch will never be spoiled.
ఎప్పటికీ పవిత్రతని అందిస్తూ ఉంటుంది.
ఇట్ విల్ మేక్ యూ సీక్రెట్ కంటిన్యూస్లీ.
ఎంత గొప్ప పదములు ఇవన్నీ.
హౌ గ్రేట్ ఇట్ ఈస్.
కనుకనే ఇలాంటి పదములను, చక్కని ఆదర్శవంతమైనటువంటి పదములను మనం అంతర్ముఖంగా చేసుకోవాలి.
సచ్ ఐడియల్ వర్డ్స్ ద డెప్త్ వీ హ్యావ్ టు టేక్ విదిన్.
సో దాట్ ఈస్ ద థీమ్ డియర్ లిసనర్స్. వాచ్ WATCH. It is such a beautiful coinage by Swami. It involves a pun on the word watch, where one watch refers to the wristwatch and the other watch refers to we having to watch out for. And it's also an acronym that Swami has used there, where each letter in the word watch stands for an important aspect, as Swami delineated: words, action, thought, character and heart. So that will be today's theme, and if we are unable to complete it, it will also spill over to next week. We hope to delve in great depth on this theme with regards to what Swami has said. But before we dive in, I will welcome Brother Prem. Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind. And it's indeed a very, very important topic in that sense, because many times, you know, when you interact with youngsters, in fact, even people who are young in the path of spirituality, one question they always ask is, what is it to be spiritual, right? Yeah, having come in contact with Swami, we want to be spiritual, we want to lead a spiritual life, but what is it to lead a spiritual life? And many times I find myself going back to this acronym which Swami has given, because Swami says one thing very, very clearly: taking control of your life and, you know, consciously deciding what you speak, what you do, what you, how you carry yourself, how you react to situations. That is what is the first step in spirituality. And that is what defines trying to lead a spiritual life where you don't let the circumstances around you, the person in front of you, the situation in your life define how you think, act and do, but you choose, you know, you consciously decide what words you speak. You consciously see whether the feelings that you're having are the right feelings and all of that. And that's why this acronym with Swami gives, WATCH. And this is something which Swami would also always remind us, especially when Swami would either distribute a watch or materialize a watch, which is very common because I still recall it used to be a practice that during Swami's major birthdays, which means the 70th, the 75th, there would always be a particular watch which would be given to all the students. And invariably by looking at the student's wrist, you can make out whether he's from the school or he's from the primary school. Mm-hmm. Because you know, if you're a Vrindavan student and you have a watch which Swami gave in the 70th birthday, it means that you're from the primary school. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a watch like that when you're in the postgraduate, that which means that you've studied in Vrindavan or you've studied the UG here. You don't have that, you're in PG, then you've joined only for MBA. In that, it's so iconic in that sense, because Swami would always give that, and invariably whenever Swami would do that, Swami would not lose the opportunity to remind us what that watch was. And you know, we might have heard it so many times that we might have lost the importance for that, but at some point in life, you know, looking at Swami's watch which Swami has given, materialized or given, you will remember that this is what it stands for, this is what I need to remember about from Swami.
It is very interesting that this year's convocation drama was also based on this theme.
Right.
The name was Watch Your Watch, and the beautiful story, for those who missed out, can go to our Radio Sai website and watch the convocation drama. It was action-packed, it was filled with emotion, and it definitely drew a great applause and a lot of appreciation from everyone who was watching it live. I'm sure it will leave a lasting impression. And it was entirely based on this theme, Watch Your Watch. As you said, Prem, multiple occasions when Swami has done mass distribution of watches, and almost every student who has studied here for 2 to 5 years or even 10 years, I mean, even 2 years, it's a high probability that he or she will be having a watch that Swami either sent or distributed or created, something like that, you know. And it is not a coincidence, because I feel this is one of the principal messages that Bhagwan would give to all of us, because, you know, though all of us are inherently divine, as Swami would often remind us that you are all divine, we are unable to live, you know, moment by moment or minute by minute in that divinity. And therefore, we are in the dual world where we experience pain and joy and suffering, happiness, everything. Therefore, as we live in the dual world, it is necessary for us to adhere to some rules and regulations. And the most beautiful rules and regulation is to watch the watch. And interestingly, as common as it was for Swami to give watches, it was equally common for Swami to, you know, raise up his robe and say, "See, no watch." I think today, you know, just looking back at that, how many times Swami would raise his robe and say, "See, no watch, I don't wear watch." I felt it had multiple meanings. It has multiple meanings. One thing that would always strike me was it meant that Swami was beyond time. Time doesn't bind him, and that's why he doesn't need to adhere in that sense to the time that is man-made like that. But today, you know, in line with this theme, I just feel that once you have realized your oneness with divinity, when you are in that state of Advaitic oneness with Lord, then you need not watch your watch, because like it happens with Swami, whatever he speaks is the truth. Whatever he thinks is Vajra Sankalpa. Whatever he does is Dharma. Therefore, there is no need for him to watch his watch. And I think that was also the message that kept coming. Swami would keep giving us a watch. At the same time, Swami would say, "See, I don't have a watch." In the sense, you raise yourself to my level, then you can also give up the watch. So this was the thought that came to me when I thought of Swami telling so many times that he doesn't wear a watch. Of course, there are multiple incidents, you know, of Swami giving a watch to a student, and not just a watch. Swami would also give a ring with multiple diamonds in it, and Swami would say that for every mistake you do, one diamond will fall off. In that sense, there was a student from Canada. His name is Neelang Jha. Mm-hmm. And he, I think, completed his schooling in early 1990s. So he has published an experience of his in the 1995 Sai Nandana magazine that was commemorative for that birthday celebration of Bhagwan. In that he narrates how before he could join university, you know, after schooling he had to leave because I think for university, foreign nationals couldn't join. There was some rule that time.
Okay.
So when he was leaving, Swami materialized a watch for him, gave it to him and told him the same thing. Watch your words, actions, thoughts, character and heart. And then Swami also added, time waste is life waste. Don't waste time. And then Swami said, if you do any of these things wrong, then the watch will disappear and come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Nilangja says that for one full year, he managed to ensure that the watch doesn't disappear. Means he kept a strict vigil over his words, actions, thoughts, character and heart. And finally, the vacation time came and he went via taxi from Puttaparthi to Bangalore and then took off for Canada. There was a layover at Frankfurt and he confesses that in Frankfurt he got drawn into the material sensual world, went into some book and movie store and began to watch and see different posters which he felt possibly were not up to Swami's standard. He felt guilty about having done that. So in an attempt to wash away his sins, you know, he says he went into the washroom and began to wash his face, hoping, I don't know, maybe he thought that it will wash away the sins. But he says when he opened his eyes, the watch that he had kept on the sink there, because he had taken it out so that it doesn't get wet when he's washing, in front of his eyes, it just vanished. And, you know, he had this feeling that, oh, I knew that this is going to happen. I just hoped that it wouldn't, but it has happened. And he realized that he had let Swami down and that's why the watch had disappeared. He reaches back Canada and the same night, Swami comes in his dream and tells him, you don't worry. The watch may be gone, but I am there with you always. The watch has come back to me. It served its purpose and I am there with you always. So he concludes his narration by saying that I am so grateful that Swami is always with me. It was a nice experience to know that whether I'm in Frankfurt or Canada, Swami is always with me. I think that is a great gift, a gift greater than any materialization that Swami can give a student who is leaving the portals of the hallowed school or the university. That feeling that Swami is always with me. So that he says that that was what Swami's gift to me was. But yes, the watch is also there. So whether Swami has actually given us a physical watch or not, we must know that we have to watch our words, actions, character, thought and heart. And if we fail to do that, Swami knows. Swami knows everything and he knows when I have failed. He also knows when I have put in effort and I have succeeded to whatever extent. And definitely in that sense he shows his appreciation. So it is so important to keep watch over our watch. I think we should go into detail on what each of these terms and words stand for.
Right, you know, talking about Swami gifting a watch and the fact that it is actually, as Swami said there, it's a reminder that Swami is with you. In fact, I had asked once one of the students who had the blessing of receiving a ring from Swami and also I think a chain. I mean, though devotees might think that almost everybody who is a student of Swami would probably receive something like that from Swami, it's not true. Even among the students, there are few who are blessed with that opportunity when they're students, when they're in the hostel, to get something like that from Swami. But we know that, you know, you cannot pin Swami's love to that. Swami loves everybody equally. In fact, even the students who are close are only as dear to Swami as any other devotee is, though physical proximity might suggest otherwise. Similarly, if Swami gives some students something and does not give that to some others, it doesn't mean that Swami loves somebody less or more. But then there must be something that a person gains by receiving that from Swami. So I asked that student, you know, what do you have extra by having that ring on your hand or that chain around your neck? And, you know, that student thought for a while and said, the only thing I can think of is every time I see the ring, I remember Swami. Right? Probably that's the only added advantage that I have, which can be nullified if you're able to do that without that materialized object. But that is what it is. You know, something which Swami materializes and gives is meant to remind you of Swami or remind you of something that Swami has told. In fact, when we were doing the satsangs on Swami's childhood, one of the poems that Swami wrote as a little boy was, you know, about the modernity, and Swami was telling that you have a mustache like which is so small under the nose. And one of the points that Swami mentions is about the watch that they carry.
A hanging watch.
Right, a watch in their hand, and they have time in their, this one. And, you know, Swami was actually making fun of that. But if you see that Swami has given so many watches after that, and as you said, every time a watch was given, this was the message that Swami gave. Just like how every time Swami gave a diamond ring, Swami would say, it is meant to remind you that die mind, the mind has to be eventually sublimated. So I think the very idea that someone has given a watch, or you wear a watch that Swami used to give, or after having heard that this is Swami's perspective of what a watch is meant to be, every time we see a watch, it should remind us of this message of Swami. And as we are going to go through whatever Swami mentioned, that acronym Swami so beautifully explained in that, it should remind us that this is what we are meant to do. And as Swami's devotees, it should remind us that we should take control over all of these aspects of our human life.
You know, before we go into each of these letters and each of the words in the acronym WATCH, I'm reminded of just another incident related to a watch. And there are multiple such incidents, similar incidents recorded. But one was recorded by an Australian devotee and one also by a South African devotee. So the story goes like this, that this devotee, like any of us is in the early times, when we are early times, I mean when we come first to Swami, we have our doubts, we want to check, you know, is Swami God, is Swami a supernatural human being? So he had his doubts, and therefore, when Swami asked him in the interview room, what do you want? He directly said, I want a watch. And Swami immediately materialized a watch for him and gave it to him. The interesting thing is, this devotee asked, Swami, did you get it from some shop? Mm-hmm. And Swami just smiled. He said, Swami, I would also like to have the guarantee and the bill, the warranty and the bill, you know. This is something very unique. I had not heard of it before, but Swami materializes his hand again and creates this bill and whatever, you know, invoice, copy for the watch, gives it to the devotee. What amazes the devotee is that invoice had come exactly from a watch shop that was in his hometown in South Africa. Mm-hmm. That is what thrills him. And he's amazed seeing that. So when he goes back home, which is thousands of miles away from India, he actually goes to the watch shop and shows the bill. And interestingly, the shop owner also remembers the person who bought the watch because of his unique features. He says, I can never forget that orange robe and fuzzy crown of hair. He actually was very pleasing and sweetly speaking, a gentleman with a very pleasing personality and demeanor. He says, I also remember him because after having bought the watch, he left. But immediately he came back and said, I forgot the most important thing. I need the bill. I need it. And so I had to make a bill and give. See, these were the times when it was not computerized. Everything, you didn't have a printout. Right. They had to make a bill. So he insisted on and took the bill. And imagine the thrill of this devotee when he realized that this is what Swami has done. And he could correlate it back to what happened in the interview room, whether him or about him asking for a bill. So possibly Swami saw that he's asking for the bill and returned back to the shop to take it, whatever. It is so sweet when Bhagwan does a leela like this. Of course, there's no need for him to actually go travel to South Africa and buy. Everything is in his control. As we have repeated multiple times, the Lord only does these things in different manners so that we get joy in thinking about and discussing the leela. So many are the leelas associated with watch. And I think it will be a nice discussion as we go through each of these words. But before we do that, dear listeners, we will take a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we will go into the details, each of the words that constitute the acronym WATCH, that is words, actions, thought, character, and heart.
मेरे हृदय की धड़कन में बज रही साईं नाम की धुन, बज रही साईं नाम की धुन। मेरे हृदय की धड़कन में बज रही साईं नाम की धुन, बज रही साईं नाम की धुन। साईं नाम गाते गाते नाचे मन चुन चुन, साईं नाम
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are discussing about one of Swami's very important messages in the form of a beautiful play of words and acronym, where Swami refers to the importance of not the object watch, but the idea of watch, where Swami would say, what is important is to watch the watch in the sense of watch your words, actions, thoughts, character and heart. So we'll start with that first word in that series, which is watch your words. And oftentimes Swami would speak of the importance of controlling the tongue. You know, one is Swami would say the tongue is the only sense organ which has got two roles to play. One is the taste aspect, the eating aspect, and the other is the speaking aspect, the ingestion and what comes out of it. And Swami would say that if the tongue can be controlled, which means both of these activities can be controlled and disciplined, much of your senses will be disciplined. Like Swami would give a beautiful analogy of how, you know, if you want to control a horse, you put that, I don't know what you call that, bite or something on the mouth. Right? Uh-huh. So they would say that's how you control the horse. Even to control the horse, you put it in the mouth. And similarly, the control of the senses in the human being also starts with the mouth. So if you're able to control your tongue, and more than Swami would say that, you know, what you eat is what your thoughts are. So that is one aspect. We're not going to go into that. We're going to talk about watching your words. What you speak, how you convey it, the need to speak, how much you speak, all of that becomes important when you say watch your words.
In fact, I'm reminded of how Swami would say, before you speak, think. Is it necessary? Is it true? Is it pleasing? Will it improve upon the silence? So if it's not necessary, don't speak. It might be necessary, for you to speak, but if what you're going to speak is not true, then also don't speak. Even if it is true, if it is not pleasing and it's going to hurt somebody, try to avoid if you can speak. And finally, weigh whether making a sound or speaking is better than just leaving the silence be. Then only you speak. I was reminded of what one of the brothers, senior brothers from the Hyderabad youth group. I mean, he's no longer youth, but he was part of the youth group which would come regularly to Prashanthi Nilayam, bicycling all the way from Hyderabad, and they received multiple interviews from Swami. In one of the interviews, Swami was asking them, talking about the five senses. Swami said, do you know, out of the five senses, there are only two senses which have the ability to shut. One is the mouth and one is the eye. And Swami asked them, why is it like that? Why did God create those two senses with the ability to shut themselves? When nobody could answer, Swami himself answered, saying that these are the two senses that leave the most profound and powerful impact on others as well as yourself. Swami said, if you get a dirty smell, you just walk away and that smell is gone and that's done. The impact of the dirty smell is over. Same way, dirty words, they come in through one ear, go out through the other ear. But Swami said that if you see a dirty sight, if your vision is bad, if you see something bad, for years after that it leaves an imprint and you keep recollecting it, it keeps coming up in your mind's eye. And that is why your eyes have been given eyelids, so that the moment something dirty comes, you can just shut it so that you don't see it. The same is the case with the tongue as well, when it comes to both, as you said, eating as well as speaking. You know, Swami says that in multiple discourses, Swami says injury caused by hand or with a weapon is fine. If the foot trips and falls, it's okay. But if the tongue trips, it leaves a lasting damage. So that is why the mouth and the eyes shut. But Swami did not stop at that. Swami said, but even among the eye and the tongue, Swami said the tongue is more important because it has dual function. You know, it is the only sense that has dual function of talking and tasting both. So it can actually lead you to your ruin in two ways, either through speaking or through you getting attached to a taste and desiring some stuff, getting addicted to it, all that. Then Swami went on to say, Maya, which is delusion, among all the senses, Maya rests on the tongue, he said. And why is that so? It is because the tongue has the ability to convert truth to untruth and untruth to truth. That is what Maya is all about. When we say the word Maya or delusion, it means what is unreal we think of it as real. That is this world and its, what do you say, attractions.
Mm-hmm.
And what is real, which is the Atma, the one being pervading all, for the us that appears as unreal. And that's why we say we are all in Maya. And Swami said that Maya dances on the tongue, because the tongue also has this ability. It has the ability to convert untruth to truth and truth to untruth. And when we look at things going on in Swami's name itself, we can see both examples, where truth is being converted to untruth and untruth is being converted to truth. So Swami said, therefore Maya dances on the tongue. And a dancer in Sanskrit is called Nartaki. Nartaki means dancer. Swami said, Maya is the Nartaki on your tongue. And the only way to subdue her is the reverse of Nartaki, which is Kirtana. Swami said, that is why you should do Kirtana. Of course, this, from then Swami dilated into Kirtana and the power of singing the Lord's name, which I think we have done in separate other Afternoon Satsangs. But the point of the matter is, it is so important that we have control over our tongue and we watch our tongue, because words have the capacity to injure and leave lasting damages. And as Swami said, Maya or delusion is the dancer who dances on the tongue.
And you know, the enough number of things that Swami says about the faculty of speech. In fact, if I were to look back at our student days, one of the things that Swami would constantly say, and I think we did one entire satsang, I think two parts on silence and the importance that Swami would lay on silence. And invariably, if something goes wrong and we've displeased Swami by doing something, the easiest recourse for us was to go back to silence. And it's not only about silence, it's because of what are the dangers of speaking too much. And Swami would always say that, you know, one of the very sweet couplets that Swami would say, in fact, our brother Sai Prakash, one of our seniors in Radio Sai, he would say that when his father came as a college student to Swami, Swami had written this on a photograph, a pocket photograph of Swami, and given it to him. Where Swami says, Mitabashi Atihayi, Atibashi Matihani, which means when you speak less, your mind will be free, and you know, Atihayi, you will be very happy. And Atibasha, if you speak more, Matihani, it will harm your mind. Because Swami would say, the moment you start speaking more, that is when, you know, you actually just have to observe your own self. How many times we use the words like, it seems, apparently, I heard, so-and-so said, which means these are all phrases we use to tell that I'm not sure of what I'm saying. I'm not sure whether this is true or if this is real. But you still want to convey it. You still want to carry those facts. And I mean, that also makes me think that when Swami says, watch your words, it means also WhatsApp and Facebook and Twitter and all of that also. Whatever you put out in the name of, you know, information that you're sharing, all of that comes. And Swami says the moment, and that's why those four filters, are you sure that this is true? Are you sure it is going to benefit the person who's going to listen? Are you sure it's going to benefit the person about whom these words are going to be spoken? Or is it going to benefit anybody at all? In that sense of, you know, is it going to improve the silence around? This is probably the first filter you put, and by which all the gossip that we do actually goes away. You know, there is no place for any of this gossip. And then if it really matters that this needs to be spoken, and that's why Swami would say, you know, when the first interaction which Lord Rama has with Hanuman is through the words which he speaks. And that was why so much of importance was given to words, because that is actually the way by which your mind is revealed to the person in front of you. And Swami would give that other Chinnakatha as a beautiful example, where there'll be this visually impaired rishi who is sitting in the forest, and a king comes with his hunting party and gets lost. And, you know, they're all trying to find the way. First a soldier comes, and the soldier asks, did you see my army or do you see the king? And he says, no, I can't see, I'm a blind person. So the soldier goes away. And then the minister comes and asks the same question. And he says, no, I can't see, so I don't know where your king is. And eventually the king himself comes. And then the sage replies to the king, saying that sometime back your soldier came and asked the same question, and he was followed by the minister, and now you, the king himself, has come. So all of you have gone in this particular direction. So the king is very impressed. He says, you can't see. You're saying that you're a blind person, but how did you know that it was a soldier first and then the minister and then it's the king himself? And then the sage says, merely by the way the questions were posed, I can make out. Because there was that much disrespect in the way the soldier spoke, a little more respect in the way the minister spoke, and so much humility in the way you speak that I can make out that you must be the most cultured of the lot. And in that sense, I can make out that you are the king. So Swami would say the way you speak is how you will be revealing your culture in your mind. And that's why it's so important. And Swami would say that, those three words, I don't know whether we have a discourse where Swami says, you should be a mitabashi, which means you should speak less. You should be a smitabashi. You should speak with a smile on your face. And you should be a priyamvada. You should be speaking sweet and pleasing words. And these three are the qualities which make up a person who is cultured, Swami would say.
When you said that, Swami told Sai Prakash's father, Atibhashi Matihani, I was reminded of a quote. I don't know whose it is, but it's very interesting. And it says that even a fish doesn't get into trouble if it keeps its mouth shut. That is what Swami would say, that if you are unable to speak with tact when it is necessary, the best thing you can do is keep silence. And Swami would play on the word silence also. Swami would say that silence is silence. When you are silent, it's actually a moment, it's actually a time when Swami's lens are focused onto you. Because again, Swami would also say that it's only in the depths of silence that the voice of God is heard. So Swami is always with me. Swami is always in me. Swami is always around me, above me, below me, everything. But if I have to access that Swami, silence is necessary. And of course, that is not just silence of the mouth. It is an internal silence which involves stilling the mind. But in order to still the mind and enjoy that internal silence, the first step is to silence the mouth. That is to keep silent. But then Swami would say that if you have to speak, then satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat, na bruyat satyam apriyam. Meaning, speak the truth, speak pleasingly. Do not speak a truth which is unpleasant. And conversely, do not speak an untruth simply because it is pleasant. Both you should avoid. And I remember when editing a video for one of our products on Darshan in Kodaikanal, came across Swami narrating to the boys with so much of humor and joy. I think it was 1996 or 94, Kodaikanal. Swami is saying that, at the dining table, all are seated and all are having food. And Swami said, you are now suffering from diarrhea, so you're not eating food. So somebody says, "Arey, why are you not eating food?" Swami said, at that time, you should not get up and tell diarrhea, stomach upset, vomiting, loose motion. You should not tell like that. It spoils the mood, the ambience for everybody else. Tell something in a dignified... It is truth. What you're speaking is truth. But you need not tell it out. In the same way, Swami gives an example of... In the same conversation, Swami is speaking about a priest who is well known in a village, and therefore, whenever he does aarti, he goes around with the aarti plate and everybody is receiving aarti.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps inquiring into the well-being of everyone. Okay, how are you? All fine, this, fine, this. So, Swami says that he was conducting a wedding now. This priest was conducting a wedding, and as per the village tradition, Bharatiya tradition, the Mangal Sutra, the Mangalyam, that is the necklace that is put around the neck of the bride. Before it goes on to the neck of the bride, as a token of blessing, it is taken to all the elders present in the marriage hall. Nowadays, because the number of people in the marriage hall are so many, they just raise the Mangal Sutra above the head and turn it all around in all directions so that all the elders who are present there can send in their blessings. But in those days, when there were about 50-60 people, they would take it to every person and they would bless. So Swami says that this priest took the Mangal Sutra and went to all the elders. There was one elderly lady seated there. And when she was blessing it, Swami said, so everything fine? Then this lady said, no, what, everything fine, my husband died off and this happened, that happened. And Swami said, that might be the truth, but that is not the time to pour your woes. Here there is an auspicious ceremony going on. That woman is about to enter marital bliss, and there you are speaking about you becoming a widow. It doesn't make sense. It is the truth, but don't speak it. So, of course, it's not as humorous or wonderful as Swami narrates it, when I narrate it. But the thing is, Swami, whenever there was an opportunity to talk to the boys or talk to the students privately, he would always emphasize on this, that when you're speaking also, use tact and speak. And just because it is the truth, you need not, you know, abrasive truth, you need not shower it on everybody present there. If it can be prevented, prevent it. So that is where Nabruyat Satyam Apriyam also comes. It's not just about speaking truth, but about refraining from speaking an unpleasant truth. At the same time, not speaking something pleasant just to make somebody happy, though it is the untruth. So these are again some tips Swami gives with respect to our words.
Right. In fact, in that Kodai session, there's another thing which Swami would say, that you know, when someone is serving, if you don't like the item, you don't have to say that. You know, and make a face and say that, you know, vomit or something. Swami was saying, you know, you just say that I'm good. And Swami, in fact, said that, you know, this is something that you can learn from the Westerners. Mm. The way they turn down something which they don't like, how politely they do that. You should learn to do that. And, you know, many of these things, one of the most important things that we've learned from Swami is the way you speak. And Swami would say that seeing the circumstances where you are, seeing, you know, the age of the person you are speaking to, all of this is important, the way you speak. You know, how you speak in front of children, that, you know, how careful you should be what you speak in front of children, how respectful you should be when you're speaking in front of elders. And, you know, Swami would say that, well, one of the signs of education is that. The humility in speech is the signs of education. In fact, there was another beautiful discourse I was listening. Swami was saying that in the past, if there were educated people, like suppose, you know, there's a village, there are educated people, or there are gathering where there are students, people will feel very secure. Because they'll feel that here are people who are cultured, who have, you know, who have been given that grounding of education. They will be humble, they will be sensible in what they speak. So people will feel secure if there is a group of students in a gathering, or a group of students, say, in a bus or a train or something like that. And Swami is saying, now it's the complete opposite. If there are more than 5 students in a place, people get scared. Oh, there are youngsters here and don't know what is going to happen. You know, they see that as an opportunity for chaos. So Swami is saying it should not be like that. The moment you are educated, it should show in your words, it should show in how you speak, the kind of words that you use. As I was saying, you know, when Hanuman comes without knowing that this is Rama, Swami would say that Rama actually hid his identity because he wanted to listen more from Hanuman, because his words were so beautiful. His choice of words when he was speaking to Hanuman and Rama and Lakshmana was so beautiful that Rama wanted to hear more of Hanuman, so he kind of hid himself, you know, in that, didn't reveal who he was so that he could hear more. And, you know, that's why watch your words is, in fact, it's like the primary thing when you talk about a spiritual person. Are you able to speak more lovingly, more pleasingly? Are you able to, it's not, there's no absoluteness in that. You know, I would often think of that, especially when you come to the ashram, we always feel that, you know, people here are, you know, behind the counter are rude, or so-and-so is rude. It's not about everybody behaving in a certain manner, but it's about individually, am I able to control my words more than I controlled it yesterday? Am I able to do it better today? Am I able to do it better tomorrow? That's all that matters. And I think that is something which you all have to keep in mind, especially when you're saying that we want to lead a spiritual life.
And when there are times when you have to say no, it's not as if you can oblige every time. And that's why Swami would say, even if you can't oblige, speak always obligingly.
Right.
That is what you were referring to about how Westerners say they don't want food or anything like that. And it not just pertains to food, it pertains to everything else. If you can't oblige, speak obligingly, because words are very, very powerful. When we speak, the words can actually go and soothe someone, or it can go and hit someone like a ton of bricks and injure them. It can do both. In fact, Swami narrates a Chinnakatha to highlight the power of words. Mm-hmm. There is this teacher teaching his students in the class when he's so engrossed in teaching that he doesn't notice an inspector, the education inspector who has walked in. And the education inspector is hurt by this. Possibly the ego is hurt. So he stops the teacher and he says, so what is it that you're teaching? He says, I am teaching them the power of words. He says, I'm sorry. He says, I'm teaching them these thoughts, these noble thoughts. So the inspector says, it is no use of just speaking these noble thoughts. It has to be taught in some other manner. Words don't matter. He says, no, words have a way of making an impact on their being. That's why we speak and tell in the classroom. The inspector continues saying that, no, you are just a teacher. I am telling you, I am much more possibly wiser than you. Therefore, this way of teaching will not work. Words have no impact. You have to go to some other way of teaching. When this continues a little time, the teacher just looks at one of the students and he says, I think this person has lost his brains. He doesn't seem to understand anything that I'm telling. Kindly get up from your place and throw him out of the classroom. The moment that teacher tells that, the inspector gets very wild and gets very angry. He shouts at him, do you know whom you're talking to? Do you know what is this you're doing? I can get you thrown out from here and this is what you're doing. You know, he gets wild and angry. And Swami says that that point, the teacher folds his hand and very humbly tells him, sir, I was just trying to tell you the power of words. Has anybody thrown you out of the class? Has any student even touched you? Nothing has happened and yet you are reacting as if you have already been thrown out of the class. So that is the power of words. If those words spoken negatively can have such impact on you, similarly words spoken with positivity can definitely have a much more deeper impact on the tender minds. And that is why we have to be so careful with words. This is a Chinnakatha that Swami narrated to the MBA students in the course of one of his discourses, which have now all been compiled in that book called Man Management. But this story Swami has narrated multiple times too, and it shows the power of our words, and therefore it is left to us whether we use it as a means to propagate love and harmony in the world or as a weapon of destruction of peace and harmony.
And you know, to come to think of it, just to summarize whatever we've spoken about, the importance of words, one thing is the word reveals who you are, and the word is important because that is a way by which you actually can affect the other person. So it's important what you speak, and it is also, in a sense, enables you to improve internally. When Swami says, speak always obligingly, oftentimes it's thought of as an hypocritical act when, you know, there's something in your mind and there's something that is spoken outside. You know, you actually mean to be rude, but you're speaking calm words. But in fact, the way, the direction in which it works is the other way around. Swami says that when you speak loving words, it eventually actually filters into your mind. You might have anger in your mind, you might have hatred in your mind, but when you are trying to ensure that, at least in words, let me be pleasing, it is not about, you know, hiding who you really are, but it works the other way around. The pleasing words will eventually start making pleasing thoughts in your mind because you're making a conscious effort not to hurt the other person. When that is the intention, you're saying that, no, I don't like this person. I'm actually getting irritated with this person, but let me not hurt this person. And Swami is saying that thought will actually start prevailing in your mind, and that is, it works backwards, not in the sense of, you know, making you a hypocrite in that sense. So words are important because they are a sign of who you are. They are a sign of who you can be. And at the same time, they are also what impact you make on the people around you. And that is why watching your words is very, very important.
Now, before we move on to the next word, I just got this thought that it is said, in the beginning there was nothing, and then came the word, you know. And we consider that the word, what is that word? That is the Omkara. That is the first one. A, U and Ma. That was the first word that came. And I was just thinking that God also chose to be silent for eons and eons and eons. And finally, when he decided to speak, what is the word that he spoke? Omkara, the Omkara. Look at it. I mean, God, even in a cosmic sense, sets such a perfect example. It's only when, you know, when you say that, will it improve upon the silence? Yes. Omkara, the primeval sound, the pranava that is so powerful, which is actually the beginning of every mantra. It is that kind of sound that God produced when he decided that the silence must end. It also gives another message, which is, when your silence is really deep, your words too are that powerful. Such a deep silence that the cosmic Lord maintained, when that silence had to be broken, the impact of the silence was such that it was broken by a sound as holy and as powerful, as vibrant as Om. We might not be able to achieve that, but definitely it is something for us to remember that the deeper and more profound our silence, the deeper and more powerful will be our words.
Absolutely. In fact, Swami would say that, you know, Shabda Brahmamai. Swami would say the first, as you were saying, the first expression of divinity was word. And that's why it is so very important to ensure that you speak words which are holy, which are sweet. The next one is, of course, watch your actions. Because Swami would say that after words, what comes is actions. Because it takes a little more involvement to perform an act. It is easy to, you know, say something, and it's a little more difficult to perform an action. And when we come to action, there's a little more involvement, there's a little more effort that goes into it. And it's all the more important to do what you're doing in the right sense, to watch your actions. Because just like how words cannot be taken back, even actions to an extent cannot be undone in most cases. And that's why it's more important.
In fact, I remember hearing this from many of our teachers in college, that karma, you know, karma is every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That is definitely true. So the moment I act, I am already, you know, entitled for that reaction. And therefore, it is so important. In that sense, an action is also having its permanent effect. In fact, as per the karma theory, I think we have discussed this also in detail. We cannot undo a bad action by doing a good action. You know, right. The accountancy doesn't work in that manner here. In mathematics, plus one and minus one becomes zero. While in karmic parlance, plus one and minus one becomes plus one and minus one. So you do a good act and a bad act, they don't nullify each other and you don't get nothing. When you do a good act and a bad act, you get a good reaction as well as a bad reaction. So that is how it is, and that's why it is so important that we watch our actions. Another reason why we watch our actions from another perspective is that the habits that we develop depend on the actions that we repeat. Like, you know, it's often said, I am what I repeatedly do. So the moment I repeat some actions, it becomes a habit. And as Swami says, habit determines your repeated actions become a tendency, your tendency becomes a habit, your habit determines your character, and your character determines your destiny. So, a huge, magnificent term like destiny has its root in something as simple as an action. And that is why we have to watch our action. And I think more importantly, we have to watch those actions that we repeatedly do, because they turn into habits.
You know, whenever you talk about actions, there's this concept which is spoken of, I think, in the Upanishads, and of course in detail in the Bhagavad Gita, where they say that how much control really do we have over our actions? We speak about the concept of tendencies and vasanas. Hmm. We invariably act based on what is already, you know, we are programmed. To act. Like typically what Duryodhana says, he says, I know what is right and wrong, but I can't do it. Something is propelling me to do what is wrong, because I can understand what you're saying, but still I cannot do anything about it. And Arjuna also asked the same question, that what is it that is actually making us do certain things, and how much ever we try, we are not able to do certain things. I would love to wake up early in the morning and do my exercise, but I'm not able to do that. There's something which all of us face. And the explanation which is given there is, you know, there is similar to what we talk of when you say that act, you know, speak obligingly even when you're not able to oblige. And that starts becoming a part of your mental reaction. Similarly, something like that happens even when you're talking about actions. It is so very important, even if you're not able to stop ourselves from doing something which is wrong, to acknowledge that that is wrong. So when Swami says watch your actions, it is not only about doing and not doing, but it is about categorizing what we're doing as acceptable and non-acceptable to start with. You know, there. When you say, I was once speaking to one devotee, he's been a devotee for some 15, 20 years, and he has the habit of eating non-vegetarian food, right? And this person was saying that, I know this is wrong, but I'm not able to get rid of it. And you're saying that I've tried a couple of times before, but somehow I'm not able to get rid of this thing. But he was going on saying that, but I know it is wrong. I know that Swami doesn't approve of it. And it came a time, I think, something happened in his house and Vibhuti came out of Swami's picture or something like that. And that moment was enough for him to give up that act of eating non-vegetarian food. You're saying that, no, Swami has come into my house. What is that I can do for Swami? And he said, yeah, this is one thing I have not given up for a long time. I'm giving it up now. If you look at it, that very act of him categorizing that as this is the wrong thing I'm doing, this is an action I'm doing, but I'm not able to stop myself from doing it. You know, it is vasana that was making him do that wrong act, but the very fact that he was saying that this is wrong, I'm watching this action and I'm branding this as wrong, made him, you know, over a period of time give it up. I think that is something which all of us tend to do, that when we start accepting the mistakes that we do as, you know, this is wrong and I acknowledge it, that is also one of the first steps when you say watch your actions.
And you know, if we look at these very pithy sayings that Swami gives us to live our life by, two of the most popular and famous ones are about watching our actions. Swami says, love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never. In fact, Swami says, if you can't help ever, at least ensure you hurt never. So I think these are two guidelines for us when we watch our actions. Through my act, am I helping someone? If yes, then that's a wonderful thing to do, but am I hurting somebody? Even if my acts are not helping anyone, it's okay. They should at least be harmless. I should never indulge in harmful acts. You know, there is the beneficial acts, there is the harmless acts and the harmful acts. Even what Swami says is if you can't do beneficial acts, at least ensure that you're doing harmless acts. You're doing things that don't harm anyone. So this is something that we should keep in mind. Another concept that Swami speaks about in the discourses that I'm referring to, which Swami delivered to the management students, is the two kinds of actions. One, he says, are Vishaya Karma, and the other, he says, are the Shreyo Karma. What is Vishaya Karma? Vishaya Karma are binding karmas, actions that lead to bondage. And Shreyo Karma are liberating karmas, karmas that liberate you or give you mukti, moksha. And what does this liberating mean? Liberating means it doesn't have or cause attachment to the world. Therefore, Swami says that when you act, see whether the action is a Vishaya Karma or a Shreya Karma. Is it a binding action or a liberating action? A binding action is one that generates attachment. We know what attachment is. Attachment to a person, attachment to an object, attachment to anything that is worldly. If my action is generating attachment, then it is best avoided. If my action is generating, you know, detachment, how does something generate detachment? In my limited understanding, it means it generates attachment towards God. Because the moment you get attached to God, automatically you get detached from everything else. Therefore, if your action is leading to greater attachment towards God, then that is something that you have to do. I remember during a beginning of a summer vacation when Swami had called us into Trai Brindavan and Swami was speaking to all, you know, before going for vacation. One of the questions that was asked was, Swami, we would like to stay with Swami during the vacation, but if our parents call, should we disobey parents or what to do, Swami? And Swami answered by saying that you should speak obligingly, very convincingly, try to convince them, make them see your point. You should try your best. You should not, you know, blatantly disobey. But ultimately what Swami said was, finally when it comes, for the sake of God, any other relationship can be overlooked. And Swami gave the example of Prahalada, who, you know, disobeyed his father for the sake of God. Bharata, who disobeyed his mother for the sake of God. Vibhishana, who disobeyed his brother for the sake of God. Lakshmana, who gave up his wife for the sake of God. So Swami said that you have to try to speak obligingly, try in your best, but finally when it comes to the relationship between you and God, nothing is more important. And I think that is also an amplification of the same thing where Swami says, your attachment to God is Shreyo Karma, that is liberating karma, because it liberates you from all other bondage, this lovely, beautiful bond of love between you and God. Therefore, any action which enhances that, that is a good action to perform. Any action that leads to bondage with the world, which binds you to the world, which is Vishaya Karma, it is best avoided.
And, you know, talking about actions and karma, we've done a couple of satsangs on karma itself. But karma is not action in that sense. Karma is very, very wide in its scope.
Correct.
Thinking can also be karma. Speaking can also be karma. But what is important is, as you're saying, that the actions that we do have a certain implications in the way they react to our mind, in the way they can be carried forward in that sense. But maybe we'll speak a little more about that after a short break, because it is a little more deeper way of thinking, looking at karma itself or action itself. We'll maybe do that after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go away. We'll continue with what it means to watch our actions after this short break.
Antaryami Sai Rama
Hridaya Vihari
Welcome back, dear listeners. We're talking about the second aspect of the WATCH acronym which Swami uses, which is Watch Your Actions. And talking about actions, you know, one of the most important things to keep in mind, when Swami would say with a beautiful Telugu Padyam, where he says that, what you're born with when you're born from the mother's womb is not with a necklace of diamonds, a necklace of ratnamala or something like that, but only karmalanyu cherchina kantamala, Swami would say that all your karmas of your past are strung together and put around your neck as a garland. And Swami would say that not one act of yours will be uncounted. Every good, every bad,
is,
as you said, every bad is registered, and it's given to you as you are born. And, you know, there was one particular discourse where Swami was giving this very graphic description of how the karma is unrelenting and it can never be, you can never hoodwink it in that sense. And Swami was making it sound so ominous that at the end of it, Swami was asking the question that, so what do you do? You know, you could do it with the best of intention, but still it becomes a karma with a consequence you'll have to come back and enjoy. You do it even at the spur of the moment, spontaneously, still it becomes something that you're answerable to. Then what do you get? How do you get over it? So that is where the concept of, should I stop doing anything at all? Should I completely, you know, when you talk about watching your words, silence is a recourse you can take many often. But when it comes to actions, can inaction be a recourse that you can take to? And that is where the idea of what Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, even inaction becomes karma. Not acting is also a karma.
Because it's
a choice that you're making. And that is where the concept of, are you duty bound to act in that situation? If you're duty bound to act, and if you don't act, that becomes a karma which you're answerable to. So from there, where Krishna says, you know, inaction is also action, he says, but there is a way by which you can do inaction in action. And that is what he teaches, and that is what we refer to as karma yoga, whatever it is, where you act, but act in such a manner that you are not bound by that act. And that the first step of that is actually watch your actions, where you constantly say that, am I meant to do this act? Is this the right thing to do? As you said, you know, as Swami was saying that, you know, when your parents call you for a certain thing, it is not about, I mean, you cannot say that, okay, today I'm going to practice only the second aspect of watch. You know, it all comes together if you look at it. Are you really doing it with the right intention? We'll be speaking about that later when we talk about the idea of watching your thoughts and watching your heart. Are you doing it with the right intention? Are you choosing to do the right thing? And are you using the right words to convey what you have done or what you choose to do? So all of that comes together in that sense.
There was this funny quote I read which said, when you make a decision, state your decision but don't state the reasons for the decision, because your decisions might be accepted but your reasons might get you in trouble. So that is as far as stating aloud your decision is concerned. But I think here when you say, where you decide to act in a manner, there is so much to consider. Of course, it will come in a future discussion. Because I'm so, what can I say, smart or cunning or intelligent, that I'm able to disguise selfishness as selflessness, you know, disguise the true intent as if it is something else, you know. I possibly want to disobey my parents for something else, but then I say, no, Swami has only said when it comes to Swami. So it is so important that we recognize that Swami knows everything as clearly as we know about us. By fooling others, we are not fooling Swami or fooling ourselves, because we know the motive behind our action. More important than what we do or how we do, we had discussed this, what we do is important. Definitely what we do is important. But more important than what we do is how we do it. But most important, more important even than how we do something, is why we do something. Once the why we do something is pure, then possibly even how we do or what we do is slightly not perfect, also it's okay. But why we are doing, if that becomes impure, what I'm doing and how I'm doing, even if they are perfect and professional, it still is a negative thing, because the reason behind, the intention behind, is tainted. In fact, Swami narrates a chinnakatha. Swami says that a boy was told to fetch bananas home, and his father gives him money and he says that I need fruits to offer to the Lord. So this boy goes out and he buys bananas. And when he, so now imagine what he has to do. He has to buy bananas. How he has to buy it? He has to select, pick up the best bananas possible and bring it back promptly because it is to be offered to the Lord. That is the what and how of it. But this boy goes and Swami says that as he's coming back home, he sees a woman with her child almost collapsing out of exhaustion and fatigue and hunger. And she pleads and says, please give me something to eat. We've not had food from so many days and all that. This boy decides that the bananas are best served if they are given to this woman there. So he humbly sits down and peels the bananas and feeds this woman and gives a couple of bananas for her to feed the child as well and then goes home. And then Swami says that when the father asks, what happened to the fruits that I asked to be offered to the Lord? The son says, Father, I found this woman who deserved those fruits much better. Therefore, I offered those fruits to her and I have brought home only the fruits of my action to offer to the Lord. And Swami says that the father felt very proud of his son and he said that, son, more than the fruits, it is the fruits of action that please the Lord. And that's how the Chinnakatha ends. So it shows that though what you did and how you did it were different from what was expected, because the why you did it was perfect, it becomes a noble act. It becomes, in fact, a thing that makes God even more happier than he would have been had you placed a bunch of bananas in front of his portrait. This is the Chinnakatha that Swami says. And that's why whenever we are about to act, though we have to think about what we are going to do, and then we have to think even more about how we are going to do it, we have to be absolutely certain that there is purity and selflessness in why we are doing it. That is what determines our action and elevates it to the level of pure action or pavitra karma.
And when you're doing the action, or when the action itself is performed, you know, there's a problem with many of us when it comes to offering something to Swami or doing something in the name of, you know, I'm doing this for Swami. It is right. The idea is not wrong when we say that, you know, God is Bhavapriya and He's not Bahyapriya. Mm. So what is important is, you know, with what feeling I offer it. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong in that. But we have to understand that Swami always sees the Bhavam, but the Bahyam is also important. When you're performing an act for Swami, the perfection of the act is also important. It is not more important than Bhavam, but it does not, you know, completely.
It is not important.
It is not important at all.
It's like saying that when I go for a drive, the engine of the car is most important. Correct. It is more important than the seats and the upholstery. But it doesn't mean that the engine is perfect and you put wooden benches. No. It is also important. It matters when I'm judging how good the car is. Of course, the engine is the primary thing, but all other things also matter, though they may not be more important than the engine.
Exactly. And, you know, that is precisely what Swami would say, especially when you come to think of bhajan singing and all of that. Because that's where most of the people try to use this as a convenient philosophy. They say, no, Swami sees only the bhavam. So it doesn't matter if I sound bad or if, you know, I go off key and all of that. And Swami would say, no, that is also important. And when Swami would speak to the bhajan boys, especially, Swami would say, that, you know, when I've given you this opportunity, for you to concentrate on ragam and talam is so very important. In fact, in the initial years when, you know, the boys started singing bhajans, in the early 80s when the devotees were, you know, slowly the boys were taking over bhajan singing from them, Swami would tell them that before you come and sing a bhajan in front of Swami here, you should have sung it 100 times before, right? And if you actually think of it, if you've sung a bhajan 100 times before, sometimes bringing out that bhavam will be difficult when you're singing it the 101st time, right? It's actually a little difficult. But when you're making that final offering, that bhavam that you had felt when you sang the bhajan the first time is also reaching Swami, right? Even that is acceptable to Swami, but the feeling that at the end when I'm offering it to Swami, it should be a perfect offering, that becomes very, very important when you're performing that act. In fact, there's a beautiful statement which this devotee of Swami, Dana Gillespie, says, she says, you know, when I sing, let me get those words exactly the way she puts it. She says, when I sing in front of Swami, I sing for Swami. And when I sing for Swami, I actually lock up all my emotions. Because when I'm singing for Swami, I cannot choke and I cannot become emotional. In my room, when I'm practicing, when I'm, you know, all alone in my house, I sing to Swami, that's a different time. That time I'm actually concentrating only on my emotions. But when I'm standing beside Swami and when Swami is asking me to perform for Him, I'm singing for Swami, and I ensure that the people get the best, you know, experience of listening to me, and they can feel for Swami, you know, that at that time they can have the feeling. So that attitude of, you know, that is where the idea of when you're doing an act, ensure that it is as perfect as possible, where you talk of the concept of yoga karmasu kaushalam, where perfection in action itself becomes a form of yoga.
Absolutely. Another point that I remember with this regard is, when that action, when that perfect action is done in God's name, is done for Swami, the benefit that it reaps is also manifold. In fact, Swami had mentioned to a teacher where he says that, I ask my students to do prasadam distribution because there will come those points of time in their life when they will need my help, and when they pray to me, I will think what they have done for me and I will remember that they have distributed prasadam for me. And for that action, I will reward them. You know, doing prasadam distribution is actually not a very physically challenging or mentally challenging kind of task. But even that, Swami is ready to consider as something in return for which He can help us out of difficult life situations. Just imagine that. Which means that even the tiniest bit that we offer to God comes back to us manifold. That is what Draupadi experienced in the Hastinapura court, where she had offered a small piece of her sari to tie a bleeding finger of Lord Krishna. In return, she gets kilometers and kilometers, yards and yards of her sari in that moment which is most crucial for her. Therefore, whatever we do in God's name, in God's presence, comes back to us manifold. And this is something that should thrill us. At the same time, it should make us wary and careful, because even if we do a bad action in God's presence or in God's name, the bad reaction of that also comes back to us tenfold, a hundredfold, or a thousandfold.
And going back to what we started from, started with, by saying that when Swami says, watch your words, actions, thoughts, this is actually essentially what it means to lead a spiritual life. Swami would often give that analogy, I think we've spoken many times about it. The analogy the Kathopanishad gives of how the buddhi is the charioteer, the senses are the horses, the mind is the reins, and the atma or the dehi is the one who travels in the chariot.
The master of the chariot.
The master of the chariot. So when you're talking about a mundane life or a worldly life, Swami would say it is typically like a chariot which is being dragged around, you know, by the whims and fancies of the horses. You know, the horses sees a green patch, it'll go towards that. The horses wants is thirsty, it goes towards the water. If it wants, essentially the horses are doing whatever it is doing. But if you're talking about an ideal situation, it is like the charioteer is in control of the chariot. It doesn't mean that he does not give water and food to the horse. It gives it when it is appropriate to be given in an appropriate manner. And after having satisfied the horses are led in a manner in which the master chooses that the chariot has to go. So when we talk about watching your words and watching your actions, it is precisely this, constantly making that choice very, very consciously. Do I need to speak now? Do I need to speak these particular words? Am I sure that this is what is meant to be spoken? Similarly, do I need to act now? Can this act be put away for a little later? Or does more deliberation, is more deliberation required before this act is taken up? That conscious decision making is what is when we talk about watch your actions.
On that note, dear listeners, because the time in our studios shows that it's almost time for us to complete the segment, there are three more themes that we have to take up. That is, watch your thoughts, watch your character, and watch your heart. We had guessed this right in the beginning that we will not be able to cover the entire thing. So we will continue with this satsang next week at the same time. In the meanwhile, do share in your words and thoughts to us. Please don't keep maunam in that regard. Write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We will try to incorporate as many of your thoughts and feedback into our satsang the next week. So we will take your leave at this point by offering this entire segment at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan with love and gratitude. We'll leave you with a song, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
Song.